This is the Adam Gold Show.
Main Memorial Gambling Casino for the insane.
Gentlemen, this bill will be a giant step forward in the treatment of the insane gambler.
Casinos have been around for thousands of years. Who started gambling? Who was the first big-time riverboat gambler? Who cares? Probably some hunk who said, want a bet? What are you waiting for? Let's go gamble.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Yeah. Who's surprised? Nobody's surprised. This is the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. That's Dennis Cox. You've been following the news as we have. Yesterday, the state legislature here in North Carolina did the not unthinkable, highly predictable, and did not approve mobile sports wagering in the state of North Carolina. Could not approve. And they used the dumbest reasons to not approve it, citing morals and the Bible and a point shaving scandal from the 1950s. It's, again, highly predictable what happened. We're going to talk about it with Brian Murphy from WRAL TV5, sports investigative reporter. He's been on the case. We talked to him last week. He said, nope. It's not dead yet, but it appears to be on life support. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Man, all of the arguments against this are rooted in 50-year-old behavior. 50-year-old behavior.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. Anyway, we'll get to it. And again, I say this as somebody who's not even a gambler. I don't bet on sports. Although, once again, thanks to Hayes Parmar for for adding to the coffers. I appear to be, I'm looking at the total, 34.65 to the good.
Yeah.
And Dennis, you have fought almost all the way back to zero. Well, I mean, it's still, you know, negative 835, but still very impressive.
Over the last 3 weeks, I'm about 1,800 to the good.
You're on a heater.
I am.
You're absolutely on a heater.
I think I might have figured this out after I got into a pretty big debt.
You know, at some point, even a guy hitting like 150 is going to go like 11 for his next 32.
Yeah.
Right? And that's you.
Batting average back up.
That's you. You've fought all the way up to hitting 228.
Hey, above the Mendoza line, I'll take it.
That is absolutely
true. I don't know. Nowadays in baseball, 228 will get you a 10-year deal.
It might. As long as you hit enough home runs.
Exactly.
Yes, 228 will work. Although some teams are kind of trending the other way. Some teams are trending the other way.
Oh, I mean actually getting on base and getting hits?
Baseball is runs in cycles as well. And I've said this before about all sports. If you fall in love and base everything on analytics, you are doomed to be as successful as the teams who ignore analytics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the truth. Analytics are really good as a tool, not as a plan. I always rail on this movie, and it was a wonderful movie, and I enjoyed it. And when I see it on my TV guide, I invariably will stop. Moneyball, really good movie. Brad Pitt as Billy Bean, the guy who was the architect of the Oakland Athletic great teams, is still in charge of the Oakland Athletics, right? I keep pointing this out. The Oakland A's success in the early 90s had almost nothing to do with having a longtime catcher who was good at getting on base be their first baseman, Scott Hatteberg.
Mm-hmm.
It had everything to do with having elite starting pitching and MVP candidates at two positions in Miguel Tejada at short,
yep,
and Eric Chavez at third for that particular season. Yeah, the Yankees got rid of David Justice and essentially were paying $8 million of Justice salary to play against them, which is one of the great lines in the entire movie. But it's a complete fraud that they are trying to sell the A's success of that era on Moneyball.
Yeah.
A complete fraud. They had great players.
Yeah. Mulder, Hudson, Zito. Those three starting pitchers were on rookie contracts.
Uh-huh.
So guess what? That's why you could be cheap.
And Tejada had was an amazing player at that time.
Yeah.
Chavez was great. Look, they had so many good players. That's why they were really good. But it doesn't help the narrative. And that has spurned an era of really smart people. I'm not knocking these people who have sort of figured out a way, maybe on the edges you can impact the system. But for the most part, the A's won because of stars. Now, with that said, analytics has a place. It just isn't a plan. Just like ignoring analytics is not a plan either. All right, we got a bunch of things I want to do. We're going to start off with some news in about 10 minutes with Brian Murphy. So let's do it. How did I get off on that tangent? Anyway, NBA draft tonight. Orlando Magic with the number one pick. They have three choices. The consensus is that there are only three candidates to be the number one overall pick. You have a super athlete with deep shooting ability in Jabari Smith, 6'10" forward out of Auburn. You have a super skilled 7'1" playmaking, use air quotes here, center, who probably needs to physically develop in Chet Holmgren. I say air quotes and center because, honestly, he doesn't play like, offensively, he does not play like a center.
No, he's just a tall guy.
He plays like a wing, right? And Holmgren is super skilled. And then, speaking of super skilled, you've got the super skilled, really smart power forward who can initiate offense and pass, but might not quite have the first step quickness that you need to be, you know, the best he can possibly be in the NBA in Paolo Banchero. Now, Banchero is probably, of the three, the best basketball player, right? But, I think all three of them are going to be good NBA players. The only one of those I would hesitate to draft, to be honest, is Holmgren, because I think he could break.
Yeah.
I think he could break.
Feed that guy a sandwich.
But, I don't know. You know, there's probably a lot of people that thought Kevin Durant could break.
Yeah.
And Durant has not really he's gotten bigger. I mean, you can't not. As an adult, you get bigger. I don't know that anybody thinks that Holmgren is going to be as good as Durant. Anyway, Jay Williams on why Banchero, fellow Dookie, is the favorite now to go number one.
If you understand a little bit of the situation in Orlando, right? Jeff Wettman is the general Magic president of basketball operations. And for him, the reason why Paolo's probably the odds-on favorite is because they posted workout video of Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith when they came in, but they were a little bit more secretive about Paolo Banchero. Almost in a way, they refused to tell the media if they worked him out or not. Right? So when you start thinking about that narrative floating around the Orlando Magic, and I will say, Jabari has the talent, and we'll get into NBA comps, like a mesh of a number of players to me. The talent is so there. It jumps off the page. There's like a Rashad Lewis-type ceiling for him when it's all said and done. But Paolo Banchero can create his own shot.
Like I said, Banchero's probably the best basketball player of the three.
Mm-hmm.
But Smith, to me, is the most elite athlete of the three. And I'm not sure that he shouldn't be the first pick. And I actually think he will be the first pick. And I think Holmgren will be the second pick. And I think Banchero will be the third pick. And then I think the future best player
okay.
will be the fourth pick, but I'll get to that in a minute. Again, I think Smith is the pick. Cases can be made for all three, and this is where Jordan Cornett chimes in on there isn't any one guy.
I think that's what makes it so exciting is that there's not a dead set number one. And as I look at, honestly, everyone says the draft gets interesting at four and there's a drop off. I see Keegan Murray at the fifth spot and think these are five guys that can change a franchise. So I think that there's, in a lot of ways, they're alluring in different ways, but they're hybrid guys. They're versatile pieces. They're gifted, unique set of skills that can be puzzle pieces and malleable to different franchises in those first five that need it. Chet Holmgren's at the top of that list. I think the biggest question mark with him is durability. We've seen body types like that. There's not a ton of muscle. His back is kind of concaved a little bit. You don't necessarily love the posture. Can that hold up? The toughness is in question because of his body. But, you know, one of the things about the draft that it always is a misnomer to me, Amber and Courtney, is people always focus on what people can't do.
Yeah, look, again, Cornette got to it. I'm just not sure he can hold up physically. 82 games against the guys he's going to have to play against, even if he plays away from the basket. I mean, he's going to get bodied a lot. Again, on the low, I kind of like Jaden Ivey a ton, mm-hmm. I think he might be the best player ultimately in the draft. All right, more on what the Hornets should do in about 15 minutes. All right, before we get to Brian Murphy from WRAL about sports gambling, I'm not saying the Stanley Cup Finals ended last night, Dennis.
Let's do that hockey.
But it does appear that the elevator door is closing after last night's 3-2 overtime win by the Avalanche.
Yeah.
We can get into the controversy of the game-winning goal in overtime in a second, but first let's acknowledge this. Colorado looks like the better team.
Yeah.
Right? They're the faster team. Mm-hmm. They're the deeper team. They're the healthier team. Goaltending has not yet materialized as the difference maker that it could have been. And I say this even though Darcy Kuemper probably allowed the weakest of the goals last night. The Victor Hedman goal that made it 2-1 Tampa was probably one that Kuemper should not have allowed. I don't know that you can say that about Andrei Vasilevskiy from last night's game. All right, now to Nazem Kadri's game winner, who, by the way, came back for the first time.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Well, they had been leaning toward this.
Yeah.
So he comes back and he plays first. Super athletic goal by Kadri. Just dynamite to basically split the defense. Mikhail Sergachev was on the ice too long. He was exhausted. Should have played the body. Didn't try to play the puck. You lose when you play the puck. We all should know this, but it's, I guess, too enticing to play the body. And he goes underneath the blocker side arm of Vasilevskiy, and then it kind of deflects up over, like, under the back bar. So, good goal. But it should not have counted. It was clearly too many men on the ice by the Avalanche, and I'll explain why it really matters in a second. But here's John Cooper on just not really being ready to talk about it.
This one's going to sting much more than others just because I think it was taken on. It was potentially, I don't know. It's hard for me. This is going to be hard for me to speak. I'm going to have to speak. I'll speak with you tomorrow. You're going to see what I mean when you see the winning goal. And my heart breaks for the players because we probably still should be playing. I'll be available tomorrow.
Wow. I mean, you could look, I'm not shedding a tear for Tampa. I'm just not. But because bad calls or bad non-calls happen all the time. But the way this is adjudicated all the time in the NHL is that when you notice too many men on the ice, you just blow the whistle. We don't need Tampa to touch, or rather Colorado to touch the puck. You got too many men. We blow the whistle. And it was clearly too many men. And P.K. Subban sort of admits that, but then goes to a place where we shouldn't even go.
It's too many men on the ice, but
It's hard to nitpick. I think the puck was already all the way down the ice. It was a stretch play that came up. It came up the other side of the rink. I don't think anybody saw it. Obviously, when the goal was replayed, everybody saw there were six people on the ice. I don't think this really impacted the game as far as the ending goal. Listen, Tampa was up 2-1 in this game. You know, they blew a lead at home. You go to overtime, anything can happen. These are the bounces that you need to win the Stanley Cup. And it's a tough break for them. Obviously, I'm sure they want that call. There's a lot of calls I'm sure they wanted in this game. I mean, they have a reason to be upset about it. You just lost a huge game at home, possibly a game that's going to cost you the Stanley Cup. So I understand that. But give Colorado credit. They battled hard. They came back in this game multiple times. They stuck with it. They battled through adversity. And now they're 3-1 going home.
All of that last stuff is true. Colorado gets credit. They battled, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you said it. You said the truth of the first part. It's too many men. It doesn't matter. First of all, it does impact the goal because the way I saw it, Kadri, the goal scorer, was the replacement for McKinnon, the guy who was lazy getting off the ice. I don't even understand it. The whole play shouldn't have. If Kadri had waited for McKinnon to come off, then Kadri wouldn't have been in position to get the puck. But he didn't wait. McKinnon was lazy. Look, it was simply a blown call. That's it. Just a blown call. That's all PK Subban needed to say. Blown call. But them's the breaks. And that's fine. It's not reviewable. Should have been reviewable, but it wasn't. And nobody here, anyway, I'm sure in Tampa they'll be mad, nobody here will shed a tear unless you might have had action on the Lightning to win. Oh, but wait! We are not allowed to have action, legally anyway, on the Lightning to win. Why? Why? Because the North Carolina legislature, and even if they had gotten it right yesterday, the state legislature, who voted against online sports wagering, it still would not have been in place in time to place a wager yesterday. It was still going to wait until January 1. And maybe it still will come into play January 1. But as we said last week, the clock, she is ticking. The legislative session ends June 30th. That's a week from today, right? It's a week from today. So I don't know if it's dead or not. Brian Murphy, WRAL Sports investigative reporter, joins us on the Adam Gold Show. All right, so explain to me, Mr. Murphy, how one bill passes but the other doesn't, and essentially it was the same score, 51-50. I guess you don't have to win by two in the state legislature. And how come we were missing voters? Aren't there 120 votes in the state leg? How did we only get 101?
All great questions.
Thank you.
There was one representative who changed his vote. He voted yes on Senate Bill 38, no on Senate Bill 688. He apparently told the Republicans that that's what he was going to do, so it wasn't a surprise to them, although it was a surprise to us. I'm not sure they thought that the entire thing was going to come down to one vote.
Right.
I've heard from people, and I'm working to contact some of these lawmakers who said they were, before the vote, said they were going to vote one way, ended up voting the other. And so I think that threw off the vote counts for the supporters of this. As for where everybody went, that's a good question. There were several excused absences. And then there were others who, as they say over here, took a walk. And that happens sometimes when you don't want to support something that maybe leadership wants you to support. And so rather than voting against it, which would force them to find other votes, you just take a walk. And so then you know, it's better than voting no, I guess is probably the best way to think about it.
Not practically. That is a no vote. That's a no vote. And
well, but if they vote no, then you got to have two yes votes to counteract.
No, I get it. I totally understand. If they want to vote no, just have the courage and vote no.
Well, I agree.
That's just me. That you don't get in the business of opinion. I do. So I'll work it. I'll work in that area, and you can stay. You could just laugh or whatever. Why was it this close? I just don't understand why it was this close.
I think there's a little bit of a disconnect. I've been on your show. I've been on you know, the OG.
Right.
You know, certainly my friends. I think there's a huge disconnect on this issue in particular from people like us who follow sports very closely, know a lot about sports gambling, know a lot about the history of the issue, and the lawmakers who are casting the votes on this. They, you know, many of them don't really know about online sports gambling. It's not something that they're very familiar with. It's not something they've ever used in the past. They're not 100% sure about all of the issues that are involved. I mean, I think we heard last night, you know, a lot of complaints about potential point shaving scandals and the integrity of college sports. I just don't think there is a disconnect, I think, between, you know, people who operate in this space and think about these issues and the lawmakers who are casting votes.
Well, Brian, isn't it? And Brian Murphy from WRAL Sports, he's their sports investigative reporter, is joining us here in the Adam Gold Show. Isn't it? I mean, it's going to sound weird, but if they don't really understand the issue, which it's obvious that they don't, isn't it their job to understand the issue? Or maybe put it this way, a pretty sizable majority of the state is pro sports wagering. You know, it's almost 60% of the state is in favor of it. Why not just go by the poll?
Right. Well, this is what, you know, so there are some, and I don't want to, you know, a broad brush everybody. There are some who have just moral, you know, they are opposed to gambling. They know a lot about the issue, and they're just opposed to gambling. They hear that it's gambling. They're not voting for gambling. There are others who are worried about the societal costs. So there are informed lawmakers. But, I think, and this has been Jason Sane's point to your question. Jason Sane is the primary sponsor in the House, the person who's been pushing it the most. He says, well, now everybody's on the record, so they're going to go home and hear from their constituents whether they think they did a good thing or a bad thing. And now everybody's had to cast that vote, and maybe somebody will come back after the weekend or after some set amount of time and say, hey, my constituents really want this. I mean, at least judging on my Twitter account, you know, overwhelming amount of people want this. But, you know, I try to understand that my Twitter account not representative of the state as a whole.
Yeah, nor is mine.
Sane, certainly, his feed has been lit up with people saying, hey, thanks for your work. What can we do? How can we help? I think he thinks that now that the vote's been made, most everyone has taken a public stance on this, that those who voted no may hear from some of their constituents. And maybe that's the kind of pressure, if you're in favor of getting sports gambling passed. Maybe that's the kind of pressure that breaks the logjam.
Yeah, you wrote about a watered down version of SB 38. Real quick, what was the watered down version of that?
Yeah, they stripped all college sports gambling out of the bill before it got to a final vote. And this is the bill that passed.
Right.
But they stripped all college sports gambling. Now, Virginia doesn't allow people in Virginia to bet on Virginia or Virginia Tech. This amendment to this bill, you would not be able to bet on Alabama versus Clemson if you lived in North Carolina. It would strip all college betting, and that would reduce the amount of revenue produced by by this bill, the amount of tax revenue, the amount of gambling revenue, by half, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly less than half.
Dumb. Even Vegas, I don't think Vegas still has it. You couldn't bet on Nevada games, teams in Nevada, in Las Vegas. All these things are silly. The gentleman who I did reach out to, and I've off the top of my head, I forget his name, who cited the
Representative Autry.
Autry, who cited the point shaving scandal in the 1950s, understood that there was not legalized sports wagering back then, and that if we had legalized sports wagering, that likely would not have happened. Because all of these point shaving scandals, and it's not just one in North Carolina, have been because people still gamble. I wish people understood that. Let me ask you one final question. Well, you want to chime in here?
Well, I was just going to say, like, we've seen some scandals recently, and they've gotten caught because of legal sports gambling. Mm-hmm. You see these large bets, fishy bets, and then the authorities get involved, and we've seen it in tennis and some other sports.
It's the number one way to catch point-shaving scandals are the legal books. The MGMs and Caesars of the world, they know what's up. All right, final thing. Because you said it's not dead yet, Brian Murphy. Tell me, give me some hope that it will not be dead next week.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to pass. Sane thinks he's going to try to find some ways. Some of the supporters think they can find some ways. The most likely way is that it gets attached to something else that has to get through the legislature, a budget deal, some sort of bigger package.
Right.
But seeing that how divisive that vote was, and it was divided both among, you know, within the Republican Party and within the Democratic Party.
No
question. Each of the parties were split. It's just hard to see that it getting enough momentum at this point in the session to get over. Here's a little bit of good news. I'll leave you with maybe some good news if you want to bet on sports. This bill wasn't going to go into effect until January.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature is back in January. There'll be a new crop of lawmakers after the election. Perhaps some of that changes who's in place, and maybe they can get it up and running quickly. So it may only be a couple month delay. That would be the optimistic outlook, I think.
Couple of month delay beyond January 1. When is the next legislative session?
It would start January 1, right, shortly after the new year.
So we're not going to have any more legislative sessions until January 1. They can't extend this, Tim Moore.
They certainly can't extend it. And they're also talking about coming back in the fall to handle redistricting. So as long as lawmakers here in Raleigh, there's still a chance.
All right.
If you're looking for some hope, as long as they're still here, they're still wheeling and dealing behind the scenes, and there's still hope.
All right, I've got pitchforks, so I'm ready to go. Brian Murphy at MurphNNC on Twitter, WRAL Sports Investigative Reporter. Thank you very much for allowing me to vent.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
It's the Adam Gold Show. I am Adam Gold. Dennis Cox in the producer's chair. NBA draft tonight. We'll get a bigger picture look at the draft a little bit later on, but right now we know that the Charlotte Hornets pick 13th and 15th. What are the odds they select 13th and 15th? What are the odds they select anybody in this NBA draft? Brendan Whitted, League Pass Lair, at HU Cook. Oh, wait, we don't have him yet? Uh-oh. We're going to talk to Brendan Whitted here in just a second. The argument can be made that the Hornets may be better served, certainly not selecting twice, but maybe even not selecting at all, and packaging those two picks plus Gordon Hayward to get out of town. Maybe bring back a player, maybe bring back a future asset, create more cap room. They have this Bridges guy that they might want to make sure sticks around for a long time. And we'll see where the Hornets are on the developmental timetable. How close are they to being where they need to be? So we'll talk about that in just a second. But the draft tonight has right now there is no consensus surefire number one. There are three outstanding options. In Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga, the 7-1, we'll just call him a center because that's what they list him as. 6'10", Jabari Smith, more of a small forward from Auburn. And Paolo Banchero, also 6'10", but 250 pounds from Duke. Banchero has the best body. Smith is the best athlete. Holmgren has the wildest skill set. But let's talk about the Panthers. We bring in Brendan Whitted at HU Cosell on Twitter, League Pass Lair, graduate. I don't know what that means. All right, let's talk about the Bugs. What do they do? Do you pick 13 and 15? What is what's the plan, Brendan?
That is precisely my question. What is the plan? because obviously, look, the one of the biggest things is not having a head coach during your NBA draft is kind
right.
of a big
That's
deal.
True too.
You know what I mean? Like, and Kenny Atkinson deciding kind of last minute to renege on the deal and stay with the Golden State Warriors. One, it puts the Hornets just in a bind because that's an important part, right? Like where the type of coach you have is important and is an indicator of where your franchise believes that it is headed. But the second part is also makes the Hornets franchise look bad, that a guy would rather be an assistant coach, even at the Golden State Warriors, even at the NBA champion Golden State Warriors, would rather be an assistant coach than a head coach of your franchise. It's a little rough. I want them to take both picks. You know what I mean? Like the names that I've seen probably most frequently are Mark Williams, that, you know, the local cast will remember as the center for Duke. I've seen a little bit about Ochi Agbaji from Kansas.
Yep.
And that's an intriguing one. He's another 3-and-D guy and he's 22 years old, which means that you'll likely be able to play him a little bit sooner than some of these other guys. Like the idea that they would trade, that they would package the picks and trade up has also been floated. So Shaedon Sharpe, the player that signed to go to Kentucky, was enrolled in classes and then decided not to play. He's the kind of like, there's a certain boom bust characteristic to him because you don't know what he looks like except on the prep high school level. And so like that's, if you're talking about taking a big swing, you know, if you're in a place where you feel like, hey, we might be rebuilding, maybe this would be a good opportunity to give him, you know, he'll take a little bit longer runway. Obviously, I think the idea is that it would take him a little bit longer to develop. But hey, if that's what your plan is, fine. But again, what is the plan? That's the kind of more difficult thing to figure out. Now, keep in mind, they had three rookies last year. They had three picks last year, took three rookies. They have three picks this year. Could end up taking three rookies again. That's a lot of young talent. Or would you rather take one of these picks and try to go after Miles Turner to address that center position that was such a
okay.
big
let's,
hole for them?
Let's deal with that. Is there a trade to be made where you send 13 and 15 plus Gordon Hayward in a deal to get something?
I mean, that's a lot. You're giving up a lot, and you mentioned Gordon Hayward. I mean, he's been floated with, you know, there are not a lot of people that Russell Westbrook has been floated in terms of trade value because, you know, what is the value of Russell Westbrook at this point in his career? But the same can be said for Gordon Hayward, and the numbers are similar, right? Like there will still be some ancillary pieces, but those will be the two principles of that trade. And again, I get back to, I don't want to keep harping on this, but I certainly will. What's your plan? Because if your plan is, hey, we're still, you know, a couple years away. Keep in mind, this is a team that was on the precipice of making the playoffs two straight years. Do you think that you're close, or are you taking a step back to take a step forward? Because if you get Russ, I think the overwhelming idea is that your team is not going to be as good as it was this year.
Well, we don't want Russ.
I mean, well, but the benefit of it would be that you still owe Gordon Hayward 2 years and a total of $60 million.
Right.
Russ is owed more this year, but is on something similar this year, but would you would then be off that contract after a year.
Right.
And so then you would have more flexibility, right? Like there is that opportunity. There's also the, you know, if you do that, do you buy him out? Do you play him? You know, does he give you a certain veteran leadership presence that he showed that he can give on that Washington team and got them to the playoffs, kind of kicking and screaming. So like I just don't know what the overall plan is. I think that this is a team that thinks that it's because they've been so close to the playoffs, they didn't want to take that next step. And I think one of the larger key things for them is going to be how they treat Miles Bridges. You know what I mean? Like if this is a team that takes itself seriously, then you have to match whatever he gets. You have to give him the contract that he deserves. They tried out the 4 years, $60 million at the beginning of the season.
Nah.
I get it. I get it. Like I think that was legitimate. Like, hey, take a swing. You know what I mean? Take a swing.
Yeah, don't insult your guy. It bothers me. Don't insult your player.
Well, he took a significant step forward last year, though, right?
Right.
Like at that point, that wasn't an insult. If they were to come with that now, yes, that would be an insulting offer. He showed and proved. He said, nope, I'm not gonna take that.
Yeah, but didn't we see signs that he was going to become this? After last year. So maybe based on what he had done in the past, that's not an insult. But based on what they hoped he would become and what they clearly knew that he hoped he would become, I mean, I think it's insulting. It's sort of like what Yankees did with Aaron Judge to a lesser extent, because they did offer Judge $30 million per year. But ultimately,
well, I want to be insulted like that, man.
Well, yes, but they're different. They're, you know, varying degrees of insult. But like, to me, that, you know, Bridges is going to be, you know, he's not going to be necessarily a $40 million a year guy, but he's not a $15 million a year guy either. And I think maybe that's trying to get away cheap ultimately costs you in the long run. And maybe they should have been on board with a little bit more projection, or just wait it out and don't insult the guy.
Well, I mean, it's a business, right? Like, they're going to try to do what they, sure, you know, that's why he has an agent, right? Like, I'm sure he had a collaboration with his agent. Like, hey, you know what? This doesn't make a lot of sense. And for Bridges, he kind of gives you a little bit of that new field player in terms of not a ton of mid-range game, but good from three, we'll use his physicality. He's a really strong guy. We'll use his physicality, yep, to finish around the basket. Got to the free throw line a lot more, which was really kind of, to me, show his growth. Like, hey, I'm going to use this fantastic athleticism that I have for more than highlights. I'm going to become a little bit better defensively, and I'm going to finish at the basket at a better clip and get to the line more and become a more efficient and effective scorer. And the chemistry between he and LaMelo Ball was real.
Yeah.
So that's another thing you don't want to mess up, because you mentioned insulting players. Obviously, LaMelo is your franchise right now. If you get rid of or fail to resign his number one target, then, yeah, that's going to bring a whole another host of issues.
Now, those two guys are the generational pieces of this team. Just the core pieces of this group, right, going forward. Everything you do will be built around them. Is there anybody else on the roster that you say, all right, this guy must be a part of the team going forward, or are they essentially all deck chairs?
I'm not going to say. I want to insult the entire remainder of the roster.
But they're replaceable. Yeah.
Nice deck chairs. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, PJ Washington has shown as a stretch 4-5 guy, it has been intriguing. His, you know, 38% from three, like, there's some intrigue there. I there are times when I'm not sure how he plays alongside, right, some other guys, particularly defensively. But if they were to, you know, not have to play him those heavy minutes at the center position, I think that you would start to see maybe a little different side and a little bit of different version of him. He's a restricted free agent in 2023. So they still have a little bit more time to kind of figure that out. But yes, I think everyone else other than those two are people that can be, are pieces that can be put into trades. Again, depending on what you want to do. If this team is a team that is going to give itself a little bit longer of a runway, go ahead and make the three picks, right? Like, go ahead and add whoever you want to add. And you can figure it out from there. And if you're thinking that, hey, we need to be in a first round, we need to advance to the first round, second round, and make the legitimate playoffs, then, yeah, you probably do need to make a trade for a more established player like a Turner.
All right, so my trade is Hayward 13 and 15 for Turner to Indianapolis. What do you think? Indiana.
That's too much. Those are pieces, like, especially if you're talking about, like, I think Mark Williams has a chance to be like a legitimately really, really good player. I've been hearing a lot of good things about his workouts and the fact that he's expanded his shot profile a little bit deeper, and so can maybe now be a pick and pop guy that looks like he could be perimeter defender at that five that will give your defense so much flexibility. And you saw how important it is to, like, a team like Miami Heat, who have Bam Adebayo, that have no problem switching any and everything. You know, I mean, this was a team that was 22nd in defensive efficiency last year. That's important. You know, I mean, if you can have, like, kind of a top five or six guy at that position defensively, it gives you so much more talent on that side of the ball, which is what they desperately need.
All right. Well, I'm not afraid to give up too much. If they want to bring Turner in, I think Turner might make them.
Well, keep in mind, Turner has been a part of some really bad Indianapolis Pacers teams, too. Right? Like, so
see,
he's
I
not
got you to call him Indianapolis.
I did.
My fault. That's my fault. I did it first. I did it first. But I look, if Mark Williams, and it that takes a lot for you, a Carolina guy, to sing the praises of Mark Williams.
Look, Mark Williams has been a guy that they talk about. AJ Griffin is another guy that's floated around that 12-13 sort of area. Yeah.
He'll be there.
There's That, yeah, I think both of them could be here. Soha from Baylor is another guy defensively that would help you immediately. He's a little bit younger. He's 19 years old. I don't think he turns 20 until the season. But, like, another guy that defensively has some versatility. I think that's what they're looking at more so than anything else. Offensively, they were one of the top teams. They play with a lot of pace, but you have to be better defensively.
Yep, no question.
And have to have some sort of health.
All right, we hope the Hornets do the right thing, whatever the right thing is. Brendan Whitted, at HU Cosell on Twitter. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
You got it, man.
This is the Adam Gold Show.